Hello, friends. Welcome back to another episode of Theology in the Raw. I have on the show today my good friend. We go way back to college, Jesse Manassian. Jesse Manassian runs a ministry for teen girls. The website is called Life, Love, and God, where teen girls find answers. Jesse is also a writer, not just a writer like she writes books, because that's what Christians do. She's actually a gifted writer, an incredibly good writer. She has a degree in journalism and has written several really good books. Most of them kind of are directed towards teen girls. And I talk about them in the podcast. The one that I would highly recommend is called Unashamed, Overcoming the Sins No Girl Wants to Talk About. Another good one is Crushed, Why Guys Don't Have to Make or Break You. And Jesse is just super thoughtful, super honest. We have a really good conversation about purity culture, about the Billy Graham rule. I know some of you have heard me kind of wrestle out loud with how I feel about that. Then we do talk about modesty. Remember back in the day when, like, if a girl wore something a little too tight, then they would be blamed for inviting the lust of all the guys, and all the shame was heaped upon girls for, you know, causing their brothers to stumble. Well, we navigate some of those issues, and we do so in a very, very honest way. I hope you enjoy it. I'm sure you won't agree with everything we throw out, but none of us are really, I don't know. We have a very open, honest, thinking out loud conversation about that. We also talk a lot about teen girls and the various challenges that are, you know, facing them today. If you would like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/theologyintheraw, or you can support me through Venmo. All the info is in the show notes. And also, I do have a book coming out on February 1st. As if you've been listening to this podcast, you've heard me talk about it. The title of the book is Embodied: Transgender Identities, the Church, and What the Bible Has to Say. I invite you to go check it out if you're at all interested in a what I would like to think is a thoughtful Christian approach to the transgender conversation. It looks at a lot of testimonies, a lot of stories. It digs into what the Bible says about male and female identities. It looks fairly thoroughly at a lot of the science surrounding trans experiences. It looks at some philosophical questions and answers. It responds to various pastoral or relational questions like, should I use the pronouns that my trans friend wants me to use? What about bathrooms and changing spaces? How should we think through the large increase of teenage females identifying as trans, and much, much more. So go check it out on Amazon. It's available for pre-order. Okay, let's jump in our conversation with Jesse Manassian. Hello, friends. Welcome back to another episode of Theology in the Raw. I'm here with a long-term friend, Jesse Manassian. Jesse is, we went to college together. I mean, we go way back. And but Jesse has written several books. I've got your website open here. So Unashamed, Overcoming the Sins No Girl Wants to Talk About, Crushed, Why Guys Don't Have to Make or Break You. I think I've read bits and pieces, if not, I think one of those I read the whole thing, the other one I read part of it. Backwards Beauty, How to Feel Ugly in 10 Simple Steps, and then Family, How to Love Yours and Help Them Like You Back. I mean, cool title, first of all.
But thank you.
As you can tell, I mean, these books, at least a couple of them, well, they are written mainly to, like, teen girls in particular, and that's been a big part of your life and ministry, right, is helping teen girls sort through life to follow God. And that's not an easy task as a father of teen girls. So anyway, thanks so much for being on Theology in the Raw.
Oh, well, first, it's an honor. You know, for a long time, I've long respected your ability to not only just the theological side, the integrity of the work that you do to be theologically accurate, mm-hmm. but your grace and ability to maybe... yeah, just wrestle with the messy middle. I've always admired that and have learned a lot listening to Theology in the Raw. So I'm excited to be on this show. I'm really honored.
Oh, thank you.
And yeah, to answer your question, those books were all part of a series for teen and college age girls called the Life, Love, and God series. And that was born out of a website that my husband started. Goodness. I feel like it's been 12, 15 years ago now, where I was speaking to teen girls and they had lots of questions and I was like writing them back via email. And my husband said, hey, wouldn't it be awesome if post those answers so that you don't have to keep writing the same thing over and over. Right. And this was back before blogging was cool and you could do it, you know, on your own. And so we started that website. And the really cool thing, we had this feature where girls could ask questions, and under the cloak of anonymity, because they didn't have to give their name, they started opening up about the stuff they were really struggling with. Mm. And it was really eye-opening to me to see, there were obviously a lot of questions about boys and relationships and does he like me? Does he not? Yeah. Should I ask him out? Should I tell him how I feel? But there were also a good number of questions from girls struggling with eating disorders and self-harm and sexual addiction and some of these secret sins that they thought they couldn't share with anyone. And so that's kind of how the Life, Love, and God ministry was born, and have been doing that for quite a while now. It's been interesting to see the shift over the past 10 to 15 years of what girls are struggling with and how they're viewing some of these core questions that we wrestle with as women, how those have been influenced by our culture, social media, how that has influenced our desires to know whether we're beautiful, to know whether we're lovable, and to know whether there's a God who would accept us despite everything we've done. I feel like those are the three core questions. So it's been quite a journey of walking with these girls and seeing into their 20s and early 30s and seeing where they're ending up. So
I remember, I totally remember when you started the website. I remember, I think we were out visiting you guys, or maybe shortly after it started. Just because you were getting such an influx of questions and stuff. And so real quick, the website is lifeloveandgod.com, lifeloveandgod.com, or if you just Googled your, well, it's in the show notes somewhere. I'm sure it'll make it its way in there so people can check it out. What are you, you said the shifts that you've seen over the years. So like, what are some of the big picture shifts that in the kinds of questions you're getting from 12, 15 years ago to today?
Yeah, that's a great question. I really have been surprised in the sense that the core questions are the same. Like they still have desire for authentic relationship, still have a desire to know that they're beautiful, still wrestle with a lot of the same questions about God. But the biggest shift that I've seen has been with social media. And those questions have become, the answers to those have become even more twisted through what they're viewing. So that question, am I beautiful? For example, we'll take that one. Looking at Instagram, scrolling through, the definition of what beauty is has become what they're viewing in their Instagram feed.
Really? Flat out? I mean, that's
obviously,
I would assume that, and I hear other people say that, but you're in the trenches of not just one or two girls, but a bunch of, like, that is flat out, you've seen that to be true?
I have. And it's funny. I mean, we can know that the images are photoshopped, that they're not real. Like there's apps literally that can shape your body in real time doing a video on Instagram so that you're thinner, wider hips, bigger eyes, whatever it is. We know that these things are out there. And still, as girls looking at the images, it can become this feeling of I should be able to look like that. It's a strange sort of neurological phenomenon that I really can't explain other than to say, I mean, it actually is true. And then the other layer scene that has shifted so much on that same question of am I beautiful, with pornography being so rampant, the addiction to pornography being so just pandemic levels in the church, outside the church, the definition of beauty has shifted and changed to be very overtly sexual. So, I mean, I just saw a new music video out by two empowered female rappers where
I know which one you're talking about.
I could watch like 10 seconds.
That is insane. That, yeah. Empowered. We're so empowered. I'm like, wow. I wouldn't, I'm not going to mention it. Cause I don't want people. I mean, it's basically, it's porn. I mean, it's worse than porn, but it's just a music video. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is a perfect example of how porn culture has infiltrated mainstream pop culture. And so these girls are seeing, I mean, I don't think we can blame young women for wanting to feel powerful in the sense that, I mean, 1 in 3 to 1 in 4 women are sexually abused in some way in their lifetime, right? So there is an element of powerlessness, I think, that young girls feel, especially when it comes to sexuality. And so they're seeing these women who are rich and who are vocal and who are dressing like porn stars, and they see that as powerful mm-hmm. and as beautiful. And so it just gets really, really tricky and twisted.
You know? I know porn is always seen as kind of a guy thing, and we've gotten to a place where we acknowledge, oh, it's girls could be on porn too, but are you seeing, is it like pretty high, at least growing percentage among girls or even teenage girls?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the reasons why I think are different. I mean, part of it is we as females are still sexual creatures, especially, you know, in those during puberty and shortly after puberty, God has designed our bodies to be more heightened sexually. But I've been surprised by the number of girls I've talked to who have been introduced to porn and encouraged to watch porn with their boyfriends. And so here's this guy that supposedly loves them, who supposedly wants to be with them, who is saying, hey, we should watch this together and this will be good for our relationship. That does things, girl.
Yeah.
that sends some really destructive messages. So that's another way that girls, I think, are exposed and then get hooked by it. I just got a question on the website from a woman this week who is no longer a teen. She's in her marriage, but again, assume that it was very much a male problem. Doesn't feel like there's a lot of resources for women, which is true. Traditionally we have viewed it as a male problem, but it is for sure not just a male problem. And I don't know what the percentages are, but they're definitely growing, the number of young women and even older women who have porn addictions, and it's destroying them. Absolutely.
So what are some after effects that you've seen of specifically teen girls that got hooked on porn and then later on get married or whatever? Like, what have you seen, any destructive patterns in their own sexuality or sexual expression that results from that? Or is it just kind of all over the map?
That's a good question. I don't feel like I can give an expert opinion on that, because I don't always get to talk to these women or young women, you know, into their 20s and 30s later. So there's only a few examples that I have of girls who I know had that addiction and then got married. I would say one of the things I've noticed is just difficulty with healthy sexuality within marriage, of either wrestling with things that they were exposed to in the past, those images coming back up, or just a feeling of sex is bad, like, you know, because it was so tied to those experiences in young adulthood. And when they were watching it, they knew it was bad. Mm-hmm. So it just, it's caused some unhealthy views, you know, of sex and of their own sexuality, I think, later on. But I think we have yet to see really the full outcome of what this is going to do in marriages, you know, 10, 15, 20 years down the road.
Yeah, really. I mean, it really is an epidemic. I mean, it's I don't see it slowing down. Like, and you could put guardrails on, but I mean, these phone apps or whatever, right? I mean, Covenant Eyes, I think, is one of the most popular ones, and I think that can help. But there is. Do you find that there are deep rooted heart issues that are kind of feeding into it, rather than just, you know, I don't know, curiosity, or I just feel like watching porn? I mean,
I do think that there are some deep rooted things. And I think, curiosity, that physical addiction that comes from it. But I think the questions, am I beautiful and am I lovable, at least from a female perspective, those do come into play. It's tricky to know. Sometimes it's tricky to get to the root of it.
Right. And so this has obviously changed in your ministry over the last 10 years or so, when you first started the website, smartphones, I guess, were just coming into being. So you don't have to deal with people walking around with the internet in their pockets. But that, I would imagine that's been a huge catalyst for a lot of change and the kinds of questions you're getting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, both with the sexual addiction, but also eating mm-hmm. disorders. And it affects so many areas of our life, as you know, that yeah. it's just shifted culture so drastically yeah. in the yeah. past 10, 15 years.
So help me to understand this. I read a book by Gene Twenge called iGen. Have you read this yet?
I have it on my list.
Okay. This is, I'll hold up there. Fascinating book. I mean, if you have any kind of ministry towards teenagers, it's, or even if you're a parent of teenagers, it's a great, great book. But, she talked about this kind of like this weird incongruence, between girls, like you said, like body image and looking at Instagram and social media, and that's kind of heightening this introspective view of oneself. And yet there's also this retreat from typical social events. So like, to, you know, rather than going out with your friends to the movies, to stay at home in your sweats, in your bed, and, you know, watch Netflix while you're, you know, Snapchatting your friend who's watching the same show or something, or sexting your boyfriend yeah. or something. It's just this weird, like you said, there's this body image kind of thing going on, but it's like, it's almost like you're still in your bedroom in your sweats though. It's not like you're going out in high heels and getting all done up. And is that, and even like the teenage pregnancy, I heard, is at an all time low, or at least much, yeah. much lower, or even just sex outside of marriage. Like teenagers are having sex a lot later. And for me, I'm like, I don't know. Is it just because they're on porn and they don't? It's kind of curbing that. Yeah. I don't know. Like, yeah. is that? Yeah. it's just a weird intersection of different things at play that you yeah. wouldn't think would go along with it. Or even like, yeah, you know, I'll drop my daughter off at school, and you know, I'll see girls with like a blanket. They're bringing their blankets to school, and they're in their baggy sweats, you know. But then they're developing an eating disorder because they're looking at it seems like it's like if you're going to school in your big blankie and your sweats, you obviously don't care about body image, or maybe you do. I don't know. I'm trying to wrap my mind around it.
Welcome to being a teen in 2020. I tell girls, it literally, I say this lightly, it is the hardest time in history, I think, to be a teenager. Like yeah. it just, there's all these expectations and pressure, and yeah. And I think some girls, they respond to it in very different ways. Some are going to be like, well, I don't care what anyone thinks. I'm just me. I'm going to wear my baggy sweats. Mm-hmm. And then there's other girls who are going to like obsess about every detail of their outfit as they head to school. And I almost wonder if they're both kind of like two sides of the same sword, of just like not knowing how to cope with the pressures that they're feeling to be perfect, to get yeah. it all done, to be in touch with everyone who's ever like friended them on social media, yeah. and feeling more and more social anxiety going into social settings because they don't know how to have face-to-face yeah. relationships anymore as yeah. a whole. It's a lot. I don't envy yeah. the place that they're at. And I'm just grateful that God is still bigger, right? Yeah. Every generation and everything everyone has faced.
It can't be discouraging when you just look at all the challenges. And it's interesting going back to the body image stuff. I don't have a stat for this, but it seems like unhealthy eating habits are much higher than they used to be. Teenagers aren't getting out and stuff. They are kind of on their phone. I wonder if that's related. I'm just thinking out loud. I wonder if that's related to eating disorders. Cause like instead of, you know, I feel like when I was a teenager, I'd go to the gym. There's tons of teens, early 20 something, you know, like working out now, at least at my gym, I don't see that as much. And I've heard that like obesity is an all time high. People are eating like just crappy food, and yet they want this impossible image. And so that's related to, well, I can just, the only way to get that is through an eating disorder. Putting those pieces together? Is that at all? Am I on something?
That is one of my suspicions. I'm not a medical doctor, so I can't wait. That definitely is something I've observed just anecdotally. I think like just the standard diet is not doing anyone any favors. Yeah. And these young women who are already feeling a tremendous pressure to look a certain way, they don't know how to eat. If they knew how to eat well, their body would take care of itself. Their body would naturally fall to the weight it should be, the size it should be. But because we're putting in so many extra calories and unhealthy calories in our bodies, they feel out of control. They feel like they don't know how to have a healthy body, a healthy body weight. And so, I mean, that's totally, I don't know if you remember this part of my story, but I struggled with exercise bulimia in college. And that was totally the case for me. I was playing sports. So even though I ate terribly, I, you know, stayed in fairly good shape through college. And then when I quit playing volleyball in college, all of a sudden those, you know, late night pasta runs started catching up to me and I felt completely out of control. And so the only thing I knew to do was to exercise every calorie off. And so that was something that I was trapped in for some time of just feeling like I couldn't eat more than I exercised.
What did you call it? An exercise bulimia?
Exercise bulimia. Yeah. So it's like, it's a purging of calories, but I don't know if this is TMI, but I couldn't make myself throw up. So, okay. So I had to exercise it off.
Now, exercise is good. Like obviously you're saying you did it excessively and for the wrong motivation. What did that look like? Are you talking like
in an unhealthy way? Yeah. Okay. I think it's more just like the relationship you have with food. So feeling tremendous guilt when I would eat and then not feeling a release of that guilt until I would, you know, see you've burned 476 calories on the treadmill or, you know, taking my 5-mile run or whatever. I mean, I love exercise still, but I now have a much healthier relationship with food. And so I can exercise for health and not to purge what I've eaten.
Okay. Man, I'm feeling a little guilty because I'm 44 and my metabolism is shot. And now it's like if I know it's Friday night pizza night, I'm like, oh dude, okay, I gotta go do leg day at the gym and get that metabolism cranking because you talk about late night pasta runs when we're at Masters in college. I would go to Taco Bell like 2 a.m. and literally eat like 10 tacos. And wake up hungry. And like, that was just a way. And now like, if I don't exercise 3 or 4 days a week, and I don't do a lot, I maybe 45 minutes or an hour. And that's, you know, some weeks are one day or none, some are most, I would say maybe 5. If I don't do that though, and if I don't eat healthy, I just can't burn it, man. It just sits there. I could eat like one meal a day and I was like, I don't get hungry. I don't, but I'd love to eat, so I, yeah. Oh, man.
We can have an intervention another time.
What's that?
Said we can have an intervention another time about eating for fuel and sugar.
I just miss those days, just when you could literally... Or those Jack in the Box tacos. Okay, no.
There's a big debate. For a dollar?
I don't know what is in those things. I'm pretty sure there's some crack laced into them, but I just can't do anymore. I can't. It'll destroy me. But I used to, easily put down a dozen. They would just slide right down. All right,
it's wasted.
I want to transition because we had this so. You were out at our house a couple weeks ago, and we were supposed to be doing this live in my basement right here, but didn't have time. You were spending time with my girls, which was awesome. We started having this conversation about modesty and kind of how it's related to purity culture that we were both raised in. I didn't know I was raised in it till kind of looking back. You know, we didn't know. I don't think it was called that then, but... we're raised in a purity culture where, you know, we kind of like, especially in our context, Billy Graham rule, you know, guys, you know, keep women at an arm's length, you know, don't ride in the same elevator or whatever. And that's kind of been dismantled a little bit and shown how that kind of way of living, especially as a young Christian guy, has created some problems, you know. And yet I still do wrestle with it. And people on the podcast, you guys are out there, have heard me wrestle with this, and I'm not saying I have the right perspective, but I have. I didn't even know what the Billy Graham rule was until like a year ago, so I'm not. It's not like I've like been following Billy Graham or something, but I have in my life almost implicitly, like not even like being that aware, but have kind of naturally practice a little more of that kind of social distancing from women, just because I've seen so many, well, one, seen so many leaders fall, two, seen just unhealthy emotional attachment sometimes develop, three, early on more so, I did, the line between being nice and being flirty was really blurry for me, and I think I actually led people on in a wrong way, and we were raised in a really conservative environment where, you know, protecting your ministry, put guardrails around your ministry, you know, make sure your secretary is 85, you know, and not 25. And even then, you know, don't talk to her, you know, like, I don't know. Help me to wrestle. Okay. Why don't we start here? Cause I just kind of threw up all of you, but what have you seen as a Christian woman, some negative byproducts of guys who well-intentioned maybe want to protect themselves from falling into affairs or emotional attachments and stuff?
Yeah, that's a great question. Oh man. So as a woman, I feel like my views on this have really changed a lot too over the past, you know, 20 years since college, and doing more public ministry, doing ministry with other men, married men. Mm-hmm. I hope as a church, I feel like ideally as a church, I would love for men and women to be able to do ministry together, mm-hmm. with a brotherhood and a sisterhood where we have, you know, when Christ talked about, you know, you're going to have families, you're going to have fields, like in the body, you're going to have more than you would have had alone. And I would love to be in a place as a body, healthy as individuals, so, and doing business with our own sin in our hearts, so that when we rub shoulders with each other, we can see each other genuinely as brothers and sisters in Christ, sure. Right? And to treat each other as such. And, you know, for me, I think, and this ties into modesty, but we won't get into that yet. That can be saved for later. But there's a temptation, I think, for men, no pun intended, to view women as temptations and to view them as a body and to view them as something they need to keep at arm's length rather than seeing them as an individual who has a soul and thoughts and ideas and all of that. At the same time, I totally validate your concerns over, you know, marriages falling apart, infidelities. The statistics are high. Pastors who you would think would know better, who end up, you know, cheating on their wives with colleagues. And I feel like there's a difference between having, you know, casual interactions with a person of the opposite sex and being able to, you know, give a genuine hug.
Yeah.
Is different from having lunch every Tuesday and talking about the deep things of life with that person. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I feel like in general, I would love to see more, more brotherly, sisterly affection, the ability for a guy that I know, you know, in ministry to be able to genuine hug without like coming in with kind of the side, you know, like, and then I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean to offend you, you know? But I'm a hugger. And so, you know, that could be my own experience too. I would love to see some of that, but at the same time, you know, my husband and I have, just common sense rules too, you know, about how much interaction, like I don't, as a general rule, text guy colleagues, have, you know, lengthy conversations. I don't go out to dinner alone with them. But in social settings, I have no problem, you know, mm-hmm. being warm and friendly and, giving hugs or, you know, asking them what they think about things. You know, I don't know. That's my very raw.
Yeah.
I have thoughts there.
I can just let just a fictitious kind of composite scenario. Okay. Like most people get married because they fall in love, right? And all these chemicals are going through your body. And we know just scientifically that your body can sustain that for about 18 months. And yet we're just so trained that this is what love is. I feel it. It's very just emotionally driven, which doesn't mean it's bad. I'm just saying it's not sustainable and shouldn't be foundational. So then you do that, you get married, all that stuff ends up wearing off. And best case scenario, you have a really good relationship. You're still attracted to each other. You work at it. You're aware that, like, those emotions that we first had that aren't there anymore, we need to cultivate a more meaningful in-depth. You know, that's best case scenario. Most marriages end up getting, then you have a couple kids, lots of fights. You start being like, man, this marriage thing's really hard. And then all of a sudden, you're at work, you have female colleagues. I don't speak from a guy's perspective, but it can go both ways. You know, you're out in an environment where all of a sudden somebody else can very easily start to provide those same chemically addictive, like, just, I mean, addictive in the real sense, these things that go through your body and the pleasure that you get just from that emotional connection. I'm not saying, therefore, put all these barriers on, be a jerk, even though I've fallen into that, you know, throughout my life, you know, shut women out of my life. But, like, I don't know, but to swing to the other direction and just be like, well, no, it's my sister in Christ and she has a soul and it's not all about her body or like, well, yeah, in a utopian, you know, after Jesus comes back, sure. But at the end of the day, we do battle daily fleshly impulses, you know, and isn't for a husband or a wife to have to develop some kind of almost emotional bond with somebody of the opposite sex, even if it doesn't fall into a full blown affair. Like, I mean, I don't know. We could just go there. Maybe even that alone is like,
I read a really excellent book while I was probably in the height of like traveling and speaking and being away from home. I read a really good book called Anatomy of an Affair. I'm forgetting the author's name right now, but it was excellent. Excellent. He over, I think, 30-year career, like, just does counseling with couples who have had infidelity in their relationship. And he kind of dissects it and kind of figures out what are the key ingredients that are common to each one of these things. And I learned a lot in that, and just being aware of the danger signs for me and for my husband and our relationships that we have outside of our family unit. One is like just understanding like perfect partner profile, like the type of person that you would be attracted to. And it's usually someone who is very much like your spouse, but who maybe is unmarried or seems more fun because they're not your spouse, but have similar personality traits, things like it, he calls it a dangerous partner profile. That's what it was called. And to just be aware that that type of person might be more tempting for you if a couple other things are in line. So one, if you're having trouble in your marriage, like you described, like if you're fighting or you're not spending time together, if you're not working at your relationship, or if you're stressed a lot, that's a marker. If there's a lot of stress and emotional stress, work stress, traveling. And so he kind of looks at those, it kind of becomes this trifecta of temptation, right? I feel like if we all kind of understood those key markers, it might be easier for us than to look internally and say, okay, in my situation, this relationship could be dangerous. And so I'm not going to be as friendly or spend as much time with this person. But then to not make it just a one size fits all, therefore I can never spend time with any person of the opposite sex, you know, because of that. So it was interesting. I actually, while I was reading that book, was just very aware, and I could see relationships that I had, you know, in ministry or just personal relationships where I'm like, oh yeah, I could see where if my husband and I aren't in a good place, that could be really tempting. And to be able to then, you know, set up some guardrails there and make sure that I'm being wise about it.
It's almost just being honest with the fact that, certain kinds of people, relationship situations could be tempting. So let's not be naive to that. Or even, like, I just learned recently that, like, willpower, it's it diminishes throughout the day or something. It's like filled up in the morning, and it, and I don't know how much is, you know, I'm not a psychologist and I don't know how much to believe or whatever, but I heard that, like, there is a reason why people typically do stupid stuff at night, you know, when they've been stressed out, when you add all these up. And I don't know, just being maybe aware of that, you know, late night drinks one-on-one with the colleague of the opposite sex might not be the best. But then I could hear, so I've been recently having a lot of female academic scholars on the podcast, and their pushback has been and would be, she's like, okay, even that, I can see that, but all you guys, we're the only, you know, I'm the only one, two in particular, they're like the two women on faculty, the rest are guys. So when all the guys are going out for drinks with each other, talking theology, talking about their work, building collegial bonds, we can't do that. Or we can we? I mean, I don't, hey, yeah. Bye, honey. I'm going out with the guys tonight. We're going to, you know, go out for drinks and talk about our academic work. Like, they miss out on that. And I'm like, well, yeah, that I don't like that either. That's lame. Like, how do we? And part of it's there's such a mismatch. You know, there's 90% guys and only a couple women on faculty, so that they don't really have the option of like, oh, well, me and all the women, female theologians, will go out and, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's.
That is tricky. That's a hard scenario. I have one similar to that in my own, and it. I'm not easily offended, so I don't feel like I've been super hurt by it. But it's just I have thoughts like, that's a bummer that I can't be involved in that discussion group because I love theology and I love wrestling and I value guys' opinions because they differ from mine, and I feel like women's voices are unique. God designed his image in to complete his image in both of us. Right. And so we each bring unique characteristics to the table, filtering things through different lenses so that when we come together, we can have a more well-rounded view of who God is and how he's made us in our world.
Yeah.
And I wonder, you know, sometimes those conversations are going when this particular group gets together around the fire with all men, if it would be different or if they would come to different conclusions if they had other voices in there, female voices. Maybe not. Yeah. Maybe they wouldn't. I mean, they're all really great guys who I'm sure, you know, talk to their wives that, you know, on the pillow and maybe get female perspective that way. But I don't know.
For me, I think I've got an amazing marriage, and I honestly I struggle in many areas. Having an affair is not one of them. I don't know, and I don't want to be naive to that, but like I happen to have a really good, healthy marriage, an amazing wife, good friend of yours. I mean,
she's a keeper.
Hopefully she'll keep me around for a while. But I mean, I talk to people that have really. Just not that, you know, and I can only imagine that the extra, there's already temptation, just the extra temptation. I don't know. For me, I've gotten around it. I just surround myself with women that are lesbians, and so it's all good. Kind of half joking there. it is an interesting dynamic that I spend a lot of one-on-one time with, you know, gay and lesbian people. Yeah. You know, and that just throws a wrench into this whole conversation, you know. It makes it more interesting. But let's talk about one more thing. I'm also like, should I be concerned about not just so the reason why I brought up my marriage is like, OK, I don't feel like there's a lot of potential dangers in life. I want to have guardrails up or whatever. But this one, I'm not as concerned about me. Falling again, that absolutely could happen, but should I be concerned about filling a void in somebody else's life in an unhealthy way, or is that not my concern? And I've often given the illustration of, you know, I'm a public person, I'll speak on stage, and as you know, who you are on stage is not the real you. It's like the Instagram you, it's the fake you, you know how to make the crowd laugh. You're saying something engaging, and you have this like fake person up there that I can imagine for anybody on stage could draw a certain level of attraction. Like, oh my gosh, I wish my husband or wife, you know, was like that person. They have it all together, even though we don't have it all together. Like that makes me, or should I be nervous about? Somebody developing an unhealthy attraction to this stage person that isn't a real person, or is that not my concern? Should I give the hug to the woman that wants to talk to me afterwards? You know, I'm just being super raw and real. I know I'm going to get some emails for this, you guys. I'm just trying to, I truly want to navigate this well. That's my heart. Please hear me on that.
And I feel like just that wrestling with that, I feel like God always cares most about our hearts. Like it always comes back to that, you know, are you engaging people after an event because you want the attention or because you're genuinely trying to like meet someone where they are and give them the gift of your time and attention because that confers value to that person. I think that's a big part of it. It almost, when you were talking about that, Preston, it hit me for the very first time. I had never made this connection. You know, the whole debate on modesty, like where does a woman's responsibility stop and a man's start? Like, this is almost the opposite of that, right? Like, Because women are more emotionally connected, like to have, you know, you up there preaching in your boxers is not going to be as compelling for her coming up and being like kind and compassionate and all of that, right? So I feel like the answers to both of those are going to be somewhere in the middle of both.
That's interesting. So you're saying modesty, and we're dealing with generalities here, obviously, but like most, let's just say heterosexual women are going to be generally more attracted to the person, the kindness, the more than just the physical. So that in as much as the person should be concerned about their own modesty, for women, it might be more physical. For men, it might be more emotional, personal, or I don't know. Is that...
No, I think that's fair. But then also then, you know, like women don't have to go around in burkas just because it might cause a temptation for their male brothers. Right. In the same way, I don't think you have to withhold being a decent human being because you might lead a woman to get a crush on you.
For instance, I have felt like very uncomfortable and not, I haven't done like to affirm another woman's physical beauty. Hey, you look so good. You look so beautiful. I love the way you did your hair, that dress. Oh my gosh, you are working. Like, I mean, that might be a little excessive, but I mean, even though part of me is like, I will notice it. I'm like, I almost want to give them that affirmation. I'm like, I don't know. Is that healthy coming to me? If I'm not their father or husband or boyfriend or whatever, or brother, maybe. I mean, I don't know.
I'd like to hear it.
Is that okay?
I mean, like, as in a tasteful way, like not like you're rocking that dress, but just like you look nice today, you know, like something like that, or in a way that a brother would, you know, like my brothers can tell me like you're a beautiful woman, and I don't think that it's weird or awkward, you know, that they can give me a hug, and I don't think it's weird or awkward. I feel like it's more than just that one compliment. How do you, what kind of a relationship do you have with that person? I mean, you might not walk up to a total stranger and say, "Wow, you look really nice today," even though she'll really appreciate it. But if you have, you know, more of a familiar relationship with someone, you know that you have that rapport with them. I don't think that that's going to automatically cause her to stumble because you tell her she looks nice.
No, that's good. So that, okay. I mean, that's why I ask. I had a woman in the store. She looked a little, probably old, maybe 10 years older than I am. And, for my YouTube, I've got gray hair coming in all over the place. Right. And she said, what did she say? It caught me so off guard. I've never heard anybody say this, but and it was a really tasteful way, really tasteful. Wasn't, again, she was, I didn't sense any kind of like connection happening, but she was like, excuse me, I just want you to know you have like really good gray hair. Like you, like something like that. And I'm kind of a little self, I'm like, oh, I'm losing my youth. It's so gray. When I get a haircut, it's gray everywhere. I'm like, man, I used to be 25, you know, eating tacos. And I was like, thank you. But I was like, are you flirting? No, I don't think you are. Just, wow, thank you. Like, I actually, man, I don't know. So that maybe more of that can be good.
I feel like we need a little more of just genuine compliments for each other, whether it's, I'm sure you walked a little taller that day and took your hat off a little more because you're like,
And then I came home and told my wife, did you know I had awesome gray hair?
Totally. No, I feel like, and again, it's going back to our hearts, right? Like if it's given with the genuine intent of being kind and of making someone's day, not to be flirty, not to try to get anything in return. I feel like that, you know, if they end up twisting that into something or wonder if you meant more, like that's really yeah. not your responsibility. Okay. In the same way that, you know, if I'm wearing an outfit that, you know, I've put on because I feel like it's tasteful, mm-hmm. there may be someone who may still look at me and think, oh, that's showing too much skin, or that's too tight. You know, well, that's not necessarily my responsibility, you know?
Right. All right. So let's talk about modesty. I know you only got a few more minutes, but
okay.
So I am a heterosexual male. I have three teenage daughters. Before I was a Christian, I was driven by just lust. Anything, the slightest little thing physically, I would notice. And in every single guy I talked to that was also heterosexual, or even in high school, maybe faking it, whatever, it was across the board. You know, I played baseball, athletes. I mean, most, the overwhelming majority of heterosexual males have they're so just, it's hard to describe to people who haven't embodied that kind of whatever. Now, as a Christian, didn't go away. It's just now it's a battle. Now it's discipline. But when I hear some women downplay modest, and so let me say this for the record, I might have to say this like 10 times in the next 10 minutes. I am not at all saying that women are to blame for a man's lust. That is 100%. I'm the moral agent. I'm to blame. That's men. It is not on the other woman who maybe is dressing more provocatively. I want to make that super clear, that nothing I'm saying is changing that. I'm just acknowledging the reality that most heterosexual males have an uncontrollable temptation that they battle. Even Christians. I was a good Christian. I am a was in the past. I used to be a good Christian guy. I was a good, like, I really wanted to do the right thing. And I'm telling you, it was a minute to minute battle. And I'm talking to every single other guy that's honest, it's exact same way. So now I'm raising three teenage daughters, and I would love your perspective here. I'm very honest with them. Yeah. I just say, hey, look, when you're going around, just so you know, almost every single guy is going to be undressing you with his eyes. I don't say that to creep you. I'm just saying those are the facts. Those nice, you know, Christian boys over here, those nice Mormon boys there, they're doing exactly the same thing. In fact, most of them are probably addicted to porn. And so they're envisioning even you in their sort of porn fantasy. I'm just saying these are the facts. You can dress how, no, you, well, they're still under my authority. They can't just dress however they want. But like, I would, how you dress should in part be, these decisions should be made with that awareness of the facts of the reality. Am I doing anything wrong with, is that and I'm not saying, look, I my girls, they dress, they wear midriff stuff, they wear bikini. Like, we're actually not a very prudish family, but we are concerned. Like, hey, that's a little too low. Hey, that's too tight. Hey, if you wear those spandex pants, this is what every guy in the store is going to be thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, goodness. All right. I've got like a million thoughts and we don't have time for all of them. So I'm going to try to condense it into like the crash course of where I've landed after. Okay. Yes, both. Yes. I mean, I get it. I mean, I have enough men in my life, my husband, brothers like you, who are honest about the struggles, yeah. that they're visual creatures, that God has designed the female form to be intoxicating to a man. Mm-hmm. So as a woman, I want to be dressing in a way that is going to keep guys looking me in the eyes to the best of my ability, to dress with dignity, to not be wearing things that are going to inflame, like, or not inflame, yeah. but just to make it really hard for a guy to look me in the eyes.
Yeah.
At the same time, I'm dealing with a lot of young women who have such body shaming issues that some of them won't even put on a swimsuit and get in a swimming pool. And so for these girls, I'm like, I want you to be confident enough to be able to put on a swimsuit, no matter what size your body is, to enjoy your body for what it was made for, go run, go play, go swim, go run in your run shorts, you know, without worrying that a guy is undressing you with his eyes, and to be confident in who you are. So I'm dealing with these opposite ends of the spectrum, where some girls just so want that attention and have been fed the lies that to be powerful as a woman, you have to assert your sexual power over men, right? Because we have inherent power in our bodies to intoxicate a man. So we can use that to our to our advantage if we want to. And so we have girls on one end of the spectrum who are using that power like a power tool and trying to get what they want, which is affirmation for who they are through their bodies. Mm-hmm. And then we have the other end of the spectrum who are so worried to show any part of their skin, either because they feel that they're ugly or because they're afraid that they're going to be like just fodder for a man's lust. Yeah. And so trying to find a healthy balance in the middle is really difficult. And I feel like it comes down again to where's your heart?
Yeah.
And my job, what I'm trying to do through books like Backwards Beauty, through Crushed, I'm trying to help girls understand your perspective, what you just described of this is how guys are wired. At the same time, trying to help them be confident young who don't use their freedom as an excuse to flaunt their bodies, but at the same time, don't take undue responsibility for someone else's sin.
And I would say to like, and this is where it again, it doesn't take much. Like you can be dressing in a very tactful, tasteful way, and it's still, the guy is it's up to him. You could be doing everything. You're not doing anything to kind of instigate that, and it's still a struggle. That is 100% on him. Even if you do show up in a bikini, like it's still, again, as a Christian guy, I'm the moral agent who needs to, it is my ability to treat you as, to not dignify you as an image of God bearer. But that, I think just being aware of what you said, though, that might be, as G.I. Joe used to say, you know, half the battle or whatever. you know, just being aware that you do have this modesty thing, but then you also have a lot of insecurity, body shaming, internalized, you know, insecurities, and that's not, that leads to dark places, and that's not healthy. Just being aware of those two tensions, I think, is really helpful, rather than just, oh, every girl wants to show off her body and get attention from guys, because that's just not true.
No, I would say that that percentage is actually smaller than the other way. And another layer on top of that is, I will just be honest, woman, I want to look cute, like I just do. And so how I define cute is often by what I'm seeing in the media. And so I'll just give you a real personal, real life example.
Yeah.
In high school, I saw this dress in a magazine. It was super cute for prom. I saved up all the money I had. We did not have a ton of money in my family. I saved up. I personally bought this dress because I wanted to be full at my junior prom. The dress felt beautiful that night, got compliments. Okay. Fast forward a couple years, I wore that same dress to a formal function at our Christian college. And the following week got called into the office by one of my male professors who, I don't remember the whole conversation. I'm sure he tried to be really kind, but what I took away from it was, you are totally just trying to cause your brothers to stumble. And so here I am thinking I look cute and beautiful because it was in a magazine.
That's
I had no intention of flaunting my body at this event. Not my intention at all. But I think for a lot of girls, we view cute as what we see on Instagram, as what we see in TV shows. And so the clothes that we buy a lot of times are going to reflect that, not necessarily just that we want to show off our body. Yeah. So that's another layer to kind of add on to.
Well, you're going to have a bunch of kids piling into your door in any second now. So, Jess, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for being a listener. And I love that we can have this kind of open conversation, because I think a lot of guys are wanting to have this kind of conversation or scared to, because everything's so angry and outraged today. And any kind of honest pursuit of truth, if you get it wrong here or there, you know, you get kind of smacked down. And that just prevents good conversations from happening. But, appreciate you and your ministry. Again, it's lifelovegod.com, lifeloveandgod.com. Check out Jess's books. She does, well, if COVID ever lifts, she is a speaker. So if any ministers out there want a really good communicator, especially, do you typically speak to like youth groups and or young adults or across the board?
Across across the board, yeah, a lot of girls events, teen girls, college age girls, but have also done guys and girls, mixed crowds, things for parents, branching out as I get older.
Okay, yeah. Are you you're 40?
Hey.
Like 40 is a new 30.
I'm 40. I'm proud of it.
Yes. I feel like we're both, I mean, yeah, when me, you, and Chris were and Paco hanging out, like, I feel like we got youth in us. Paco's out climbing, like, 15,000-foot mountains every other day. I mean, come on.
We live and work at a camp that has young people around all year round, so I think it keeps us young.
Yes, for we didn't mention this, but Jess lives at Hume Lake. You've been there, I mean, off and on for many years.
Yeah.
Most people know Hume Lake Christian Camps, at least if you're out in California. You probably got saved there a few times at least. So.
At least three times. Yeah. I know I did. Oh, I love it. All Preston, right. Thank you so much for having me on. This has been so fun. I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you. You too.
Look forward to conversations in the future.
Take care.